love, love me do. You know I love you. I'll always be true. So please, love me do. I love all members of the body of Christ. I don't like all of them. I'm sorry. I don't like all of them, but I love all of them. And remember, love underlies everything God does. I don't know why that song struck me today. Hello, everyone. Martin Zender. And today, we're going to look at the feasts of Israel and what they typify. Because A. Enoch mentions it in his book in conjunction with the souls underneath the altar, which we now realize are not literally there, but they speak of all the souls that will be martyred. But specifically those who will come out of the Great Tribulation. That's true. Specifically those who come out of the Great Tribulation. But as the resurrection has not occurred yet, even at the time John is seeing this, the former resurrection isn't happening until later. When Christ returns, and we're still looking forward to that time, even in the book of the unveiling here as we go ahead, we're not seeing the return of Christ yet. We still have several calamities to get through. Come on, let the calamities run their course, please. We have trumpets. We have lightning. We have thunders. We have bowls to be poured out. Please, everything in due time. Then Christ, the sign of the Son of Man, however you want to look at it, comes. And then all the nations beat their breasts. Ow, ow. Out. And then, 75 days after his advent, then the former resurrection occurs. Wow, Zender, you got inside information. How do you know it's 75 days? That's from the book of Daniel. We'll get to that, because I'm going to be dipping into the book of Daniel as we get to the wild beast. We're not there yet, because after this, we're going to the sixth seal. And that's scary. I stutter every time I say it, because you'll see when we get there. Then we're going to look at the 144,000, which is an easy topic. We're going to breeze through that. Not that we're not going to give you detail. We are. I told you I was going to start today with a verse about the under the altar. This is Leviticus 4:7 from Young's Literal Translation. And the priest hath, see, you got a TH here. I told you. The priest hath put of the blood on the horns of the altar of spice perfume before Jehovah, which is in the tent of the meeting. You got this so far? All right, here's the meat. And all the blood of the bullock he doth pour out at the foundation of the altar. The foundation, there it is. He pours the blood at the foundation of the altar. The priest does this. Of the burnt offering, which is in the opening of the tent of meeting. Now, I found some information about the river that flowed under that we're going to get to the feasts. Don't worry. Maybe you should worry. I don't know. This is an article by George Wesley Buchanan. I found this on askelm.com, which is Ernest Martin, since deceased. His website, interesting website. Some good stuff here. I don't agree with everything on here, but nevertheless, here's an article by George Wesley Buchanan. Just going to read a bit of this. In a recent issue of Expository Times, I reported the exciting experience I enjoyed when I went to Jerusalem to see the ruins of the Tower of Siloam. When I thought of Ezekiel's account of the way the water would flow out from under the threshold of the temple and on down to the Dead Sea, where it sweetened the water of the Dead Sea. I don't see how that happens, but in Ezekiel's vision it happened. Water sweetens. Boy, that's pregnant with meaning. Yeah. That vision of Ezekiel is about to give birth to a baby, because the blood does sweeten the whole world, doesn't it? The blood of Christ, the suffering of Christ. Anyway, I immediately realized that the Jerusalem temple had to be located on the ridge above the spring of Siloam and not on the dry mound where the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque are now located. And this is, again, an article dealing with the location of the temple, that where the Dome of the Rock is not the location, because, as always, Israel gets everything wrong. And, in fact, the Wailing Wall is not a part of Herod's temple, because Jesus said that not one stone is left upon another, would be left upon another. And they had people fold up their little prayer papers and shove them in the cracks of what? Not a remnant of the Herod's temple, but a remnant of the fortress Antonia. That's right. Jews are putting their little prayer papers into a remnant of a Roman barracks. And that's perfect. That's beautiful, because the Jews, in this day of their blindness, will get everything wrong. So they're worshiping at Pontius Pilate's barracks, at a wall, a remnant. Because when Titus came to Rome, he left a piece of that up as a monument to humiliate the Jews. He tore down the temple, but he left. Did I say Titus? Yeah, when Titus came from Rome in 70 AD to sack Jerusalem, he took down the temple, but he left part of Pontius Pilate's barracks up, the praetorium, if you will, because that would be a constant reminder of the jurisdiction of Rome. And so the poor Jews are worshiping at the Pontius Pilate's headquarters. Ezekiel was a good geographer. He had lived in Jerusalem, and he knew the topography and geography of the land. Ezekiel was one of the first Testament authors to identify the boundaries of the promised land. Okay. Anyway, this is kind of interesting here. Let's read this part. 2 centuries before the time of Herod, Aristeus saw the spring water flowing through the temple, flushing out the blood from sacrifices. When Yadin was editing the Qumran temple scroll, he quoted the text that gives directions for establishing a place where priests could change their garments, bathe, and change into priestly garments before participating in the temple services. This place for bathing required flowing water with a canal to direct the bathwater away into a drain that escaped into the ground. The mixture of blood and water was forbidden to be touched before it vanished into the drain, because it would have been defiled with blood. So anyway, the Siloam spring was the one that was flushed the bloody mixture out of the cistern beneath the altar, and it eventually went into the Kidron. Very interesting. And this proves that the Dome of the Rock is not the location of Herod's temple. And they're all fighting over the Dome of the Rock, aren't they? Like, how are you going to rebuild the temple? Because it has to go where the Dome of the Rock is. And who's going to destroy the Dome of the Rock? But if the location of the temple was not really where the Dome of the Rock is, and it's a few hundred meters the other way over the pool of Siloam or the stream of Siloam, then we have another site available for a temple that's actually the right site. Anyway, these are all subtopics that I know are very interesting, but if we pursue all this, we're never going to get to the point at hand here. Now, there were three main festivals in Israel that had different celebrations associated with them: Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Passover occurred at the beginning of the Jewish year was Nisan. N-I-S-A-N, the month. Some say Nisan, but that's a make of a car. Nisan was our April, is our April, and the Passover was on the 14th of Nisan, and this is a commemoration of the Passover in Egypt, when the angel of the Lord passed over those homes in Egypt that had the blood on the doorpost, blood speaking of the blood from the Lamb. And this all prefigured Jesus Christ coming, the ultimate blood, the ultimate safety, the ultimate protector from devastation, and our deliverer out of the coming indignation, I might add. So the fulfillment of Passover, all these feasts have their fulfillment. There's a spiritual reality here. Here's a good example of what I've been telling you. You can't take a literal thing that actually happened. Like, these feasts were real. These people celebrated these things. But they also had spiritual significance. And you and I, folks, we have the blessed privilege of seeing the literal and the spiritual significance of it. Some people, preterists and others, they love to spiritualize everything. But in doing so, they obliterate the literal. They use the spiritual to usurp and to really jettison the literal out, shove it out of the way as if it doesn't exist. For instance, the Jordan River. Oh, that's a type of death, or, you know, going over the Jordan into the Promised Land. Many of the black spirituals talk about going over the Jordan River. Never heard one. I'm making it up as I go, but I've heard of it, right? So the Jordan River speaks of death, but there's also a literal river. You can see it on a map of Israel, the Jordan River. So the Passover was a type of the death of Christ. Interesting, there's seven specific feasts here. Four of them are historical. In other words, four of them have been fulfilled in a spiritual manner. In the past, three are still future, and that's what we're getting at with the souls underneath the altar. The next was the unleavened bread began right after Passover, and for a week the Jews were to eat bread with no leaven in it, because leaven became a type of evil. And so they were, as this is all symbolic. Why do they have to eat bread for 7 days? It's all symbolic. It all means something. This corresponds to the Acts period, unleavened bread. Why it corresponds to the Acts period, I'm not really precisely sure there, but I do understand the first fruit. The first fruit was the next feast, and it was the wave offering. Oh, Jesus, of course. Jesus he breaks the bread and gives it to his disciples, and it's unleavened bread. And Jesus is going to drive evil, the unleavened. Leaven again speaks of evil. Jesus spoke of the leaven of the Pharisees at one point, remember? And he's going to drive all evil out of Israel. And this began soon after his resurrection with his disciples. Now we come to the first fruit. This was the celebration of the grain offering. This was still in the month of April. It all had to do with somewhat with the Passover. Somewhat. It was associated with it. The first fruit, they would take the first fruit of the wheat offering, I believe they would take a grain, a sheaf of wheat, and they would wave it before God as a testimony that the rest of the crop would come in. It was their expectation that this would be a first fruit, thus first fruit. And it speaks of resurrection. It speaks of that we're taking this dead grain, we're taking this seed that we have planted in the ground. It's been watered, it's been sunned upon, and now it is rising from the dirt. It speaks of resurrection, Christ's resurrection. Now there's Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks. 50 days after Passover, or 7 weeks, thus Feast of Weeks, there was the Feast of Pentecost. And we know that the fulfillment of this was when Peter came racing out of the upper room, speaking in a language that everybody could understand. That's the Feast of Pentecost. That was fulfilled. That was fulfilled in Acts. The literal feast was fulfilled in a spiritual way. I mean, it was fulfilled every year in Israel. They did this. They celebrated this. I know I'm not getting into details here, because there are lots of details. But it was fulfilled spiritually during the Acts administration. And there was a more full, shall we say, harvest. This has to do with agriculture. First fruit, Pentecost, has to do with agriculture. And Jesus gave the parable of agriculture about seeds being sown, and some growing, some not, and then the wheat comes up. Now we're seeing the wheat coming up. We're seeing fruit from Jesus Christ's death, beginning with the disciples. You might call them the first fruit. They're the first fruit. They're, in a sense, resurrected. Although Jesus' resurrection, I could say, is the first fruit. He's the first fruit. There are other first fruits. So resurrection is spoken of when you look at the feast of the first fruit. Then Pentecost is basically more resurrection, the fullness of the grain harvest. But now we get to trumpets. Now, those are the first four feasts: Passover, unleavened bread, first fruit, Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks. The next three occur in the month of Tishri, which is our October, the fall of the year. This has to do with judgment trumpets, and we have the most holy day in Israel, the Day of Atonement, otherwise known as propitiation, and we have the Feast of Tabernacles, which speaks of the coming kingdom. This is why I think the kingdom will be inaugurated in October. Not this October, maybe, no, not this October, but in October. Anyway, we're going to get to the next three feasts tomorrow. And again, do not sacrifice the literal when we discuss the spiritual fulfillment of all these wonderful types.